taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And as I like to tell you, we need to trust, but we also need to verify. We need to find out for ourselves, because the institutions that many of us have trusted for years will have shown themselves to be untrustworthy. And in an excellent example, I found this article, it came originally from Just the News, and it lists several interesting studies that have been done. Now, one of them was a German school children that measured the carbon dioxide content in the air that they inhale with and without a mask. And they tried multiple different types of masks. What they found was that the amount of CO2 in the child's breath that they're breathing in is 3 times higher than allowed by German law. They also looked at the Journal of Vaccines, and apparently it was also done with the American Society of Virology. They published research that said for every 3 COVID deaths prevented by vaccination, they are offset by 2 deaths inflicted by vaccination. This is done using Israeli and European data. So they're saying to save 3 lives, we must kill 2. Now, the interesting thing is the paper shared a single lead author, Harold Wallach, a professor at the University of Poland. And what he points out in the German paper is that most complaints reported by children can be understood as consequences of elevated carbon dioxide levels in inhaled air. Yet we're being told more and more that people have to wear masks, that children have to wear masks, and that even after getting the vaccine, people have to wear masks. You know, when we understand, and again, I'm not a doctor, but when I'm looking at doctors and reports that are saying, you know what, hypercapnia, or the increase of the buildup of CO2 in the bloodstream, has noticeable effects. Yet nobody thinks about the fact that, okay, first of all, the mask, the pores in the mask are not slightly larger than the virus. They're 1,000 times larger than the virus. So they don't really stop the virus. They may catch a water droplet, but the virus, it's still there. And these studies are showing that there are dangers in these mask requirements, especially to children. Yet what do we have here? The CDC says that 5-year-olds will still need to wear masks after the vaccine is approved for kids. So we're going to give them... stop for just a second. Okay, so the CDC says that once the vaccine is approved for children as young as 5, we're going to have them take an experimental drug. That's right, experimental. It's still emergency use authorization. For a disease, they have a 99.68% chance of surviving. And then we're going to tell them, oh, but you still need to wear a mask after you've been vaccinated. So you know what this tells me? Well, it tells me 2 things. It tells me masks don't work. Because if masks worked, you wouldn't need the vaccine. And if vaccines don't work, because if vaccines worked, you wouldn't need the mask. These are... You know, if you stop and think about what's being said, the CDC is basically admitting that the vaccine doesn't work, that the masks don't work, but we're going to make you do it anyway. But here's the interesting point. This is where a little bit of linguistics enters the picture. Now, the title of this article, which came out of the Daily Caller, is CDC says 5-year-olds will still need to wear masks after vaccine is approved for kids. Now, I've told you, you can't trust the headlines. You got to dig into the article because, well, I find more often that headlines are wrong or at least misleading. So I went down to the article and they're basically saying, well, listen, it's going to take us a chance to ramp up and all that. But here's the part that really got me. Quoting Ms. Walensky, we also know that from previous data that schools that have had masks in place were 3.5 times less likely to have school outbreaks requiring school closures. Well, I don't know about the school closures, but I do know that in Florida, which is one of the first states to not require masks, they had schools that required masks and they had schools that didn't require masks, and they found incidence of infection with COVID was roughly the same. Statistically, didn't make a difference. Now, Walensky continued to say, so right now we are going to continue to recommend masks in all schools for all people in those schools. See, they're going to recommend masks. Remember that title thing? The headline says need to. They're saying recommend. Why that's important? Because they don't need to. There is no need. And as a free parent of your children, you don't need to stick a mask on their face. Now, you may want to stick a mask on your face, on their face. You may think that's the best solution. And if that's what you think, well, go ahead. So I believe we live in a free country, and if you want to put a mask on your child, until we have evidence that that is doing true immediate harm to the child, go ahead and do it. But you don't need to. If you look at this data and it says, no, I'm not going to inflict hypercapnia on my child. I'm not going to expose them to the pathogens that have been found in children's masks. Oh, yeah, 100 parents had their children's masks independently tested after they'd been worn at school, and they found something like 11 deadly pathogens in those masks. So you don't need to. You may voluntarily comply, but you don't need to. But what if the school mandates it? If it's a public school, well, then they're committing a crime. Yeah, you see, Article 5 of the Constitution and Amendment 14 of the Constitution, Amendment 5 and Amendment 14 of the Constitution says that someone cannot be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without due process of law. You have a liberty to go about your life as you see fit. If people don't like it, then they can go somewhere else. If you're out in public, you have a right to be out in public. And you have a property in your body. So if you decide not to put a mask on because you look at the consequences of wearing a mask, that's your right. It's also your duty to suffer the consequences of that. If it exposes you to a possibility of getting sick, that's the consequence of your decision. But you don't have the right to tell someone else to do something with their body because you're afraid of what might happen to you. That's not a valid use of your right. That is an infringement on other people's rights. So you don't need to do this. If you choose to, then go ahead. That is your right. But then we have and this, by the way, was confirmed because the Surgeon General said that children will likely still have to wear masks in school. Now, apparently, he was interviewed on CNN's program New Day, and he replied to the question about vaccination of school children, and he said that there may need to still wear masks until the CDC says otherwise. So the CDC has guidance currently says even if you are vaccinated, you do need to wear a mask. That will likely be the case for children until the CDC changes it. Okay, let's back up again. So the Surgeon General is admitting neither the masks nor the vaccines work. Well, if they worked, you wouldn't need both, would you? No. So again, the Surgeon General, who's telling you you should wear a mask, is admitting that, well, masks don't work because if the masks work, you wouldn't need the vaccine. He's admitting the vaccines don't work because the vaccines work, you wouldn't need the mask. But he says that the CDC has guidance currently says if you're vaccinated, you need to wear masks. Again, you don't need to. If you are a free citizen, you don't need to wear a stupid mask. If you're a subject of government, well, then you may need to wear a mask. But if you're a free citizen, You don't need to wear a mask, and he has no legal authority to mandate that you wear a mask. The Constitution of the United States is your legal authority to say, no, we did not delegate to the federal government the authority to tell me whether or not I had to wear a mask. We did not delegate to the United States the authority to deal with public health, period. CDC, FDA, NIH, illegal, unconstitutional, void, empty. Oh, that's not me saying it. That's the Supreme Court. An act of Congress, contrary, or I should say repugnant to the Constitution, is void. 10th Amendment says if we didn't give that power to the United States, they don't have it. It remains with the states or with the people. So we don't need to do anything, they're saying, because their existence is meaningless. But again, what do they tell us? Oh, well, the government said this, they said you need to. That's the act of a vassal. That's the act of a slave. Remember William Pitt the Younger? Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. So here we have necessity. We need to. We see the tyrants telling us we need to wear masks. We need to get vaccines. We need to do this. And my answer is, no, I don't. See, I'm not a slave. I don't sit and wonder and wait for my master in government to tell me how to live my life. I am a citizen. I do not listen to the cries of tyrants. I do not subject myself as a slave. So when these people say, I need to wear a mask, well, they need to go somewhere else because I will not stand for it. Now, if I go to a private place, a private business, a private home, some private property, and they say, listen, you need to wear a mask to be in here, that's different. That's private property. By the way, I avoid that. I avoid those places. I see a restaurant that I want to go to and it has a sign that says, I need to wear a mask. I need to go somewhere else. My wife is looking for a new doctor. And one of the first things we're asking is, okay, do we need a vaccine? Do we need a mask? We're looking for a place that believes in freedom. Because I will not be subject to tyranny. See, that's the dirty little secret. Government is a bully. Government is often, they're a bully. They're exercising powers we did not authorize because they expect us to back down, to simply submit to their illegal rules and orders, to their null and void pretend legislation. And when you realize that all power is inherent in the people, that we delegate to governments limited powers, just powers at our consent, well, then your life changes. And if you can take that and you can share it with others, well, you can change their lives as well. Now, why do I focus on something like a mask? Why do I make a big deal about masks? Now, I've said before, I refuse to get a vaccine, I refuse to take a COVID test, and I will only wear a mask under duress. So why do I do this? Well, because if we simply look around, we find that if we don't stand up, what rights we have will quickly disappear. I've already talked about what's been going on in Australia, where Australia literally has returned to a prison colony. It is once again a prison colony. You have people being tackled in the street by law enforcement for being out at the wrong time or not wearing a mask. You have people's groceries being delivered and searched by government to see if they comply with the rules. You have people being locked in their own homes for the simple crime of not bowing to government. Now, I've also talked about the Canadian pastor, Artur Pawlowski. This brave man who stood up to the police coming down, trying to crack down on his worshipers during a Passover service. During Easter weekend. Now, he grew up in Poland. He understands tyranny, at least to an extent. So he fought. He was later arrested for defying these lockdown orders and restrictions. Now, again, I'm not familiar with the Canadian Constitution, but I am familiar with freedom. And now, a Canadian judge is telling Pastor Pawlowski and his brother David that they must push their congregants and patrons. They must preach science if they continue to rail against the public health rules. How about the science I was just quoting about the rebreathing of CO2? How about the science that shows that COVID is not deadly to the vast majority of the people? Not seriously. How about the science that shows actual treatment, basic treatment, not even exotic treatment, basic treatment can treat most COVID-19? No, instead, Pastor Pawlowski and his brother are being held in contempt of court because they are preaching not only the truth, but their conscience. Now you say, Paul, this is Canada. What makes you think it's not going to happen here? Courts have already ordered bakers saying, you must bake cakes that violate your religious belief. You must take photographs of weddings in violation of your religious belief. You must build websites that promote things that violate your religious belief. Do you really think there's not a court in this land that won't say, you must preach the government's worldview, the government's order, the government's dictate, or you'll be fined, held in contempt, thrown in jail? Heck, we got dozens of people in jail in Washington, D.C. for having the temerity to demonstrate against an election that violated the Constitution of the United States. I know, I'm surprised YouTube hasn't kicked me off already. Facebook kicked me off even before the election. But it's real simple. They demonstrated. A few of them maybe got a little out of hand, but nothing, I mean, not, those crimes should be punished, but those are minor property offenses. But people have been in jail for months, some of them in solitary confinement. One man denied medical treatment for demonstrating and pointing out that at least 5 of the 50 states violated the Constitution when they appointed presidential electors. If we're willing to do that, you really think there aren't judges and law enforcement that will lock you up for daring to defy the government's edict? Or even worse, telling others to do so as well? I was up in at a meeting last week. I'm going to one this evening, actually, where I'm talking about vaccine mandates and the 10th Amendment and the Supremacy Clause, and pointing out just how empty and vacuous the arguments from government are. Just how void these laws and rules and regulations. We are all in a tizzy about the OSHA regulations. Well, guess what? They're void. They're empty. They're meaningless. Except for the fact that we cower before bullies. I know it's scary to cower before bullies, but if you don't stand up to the bully, you end up like Pastor Pawlowski. Jailed, held in contempt for preaching the truth. Because it's in conflict with the masters in government, or the people at least think they're the masters in government, want it done. This is not a small issue. Now, there's been a lot of people protesting the upcoming regulations from OSHA. People walking off the job, people demonstrating, and I applaud that. But what I want to see them do is not simply demonstrate. I want to see them stand up to the bully. See, no, we did not authorize this. This is not a power. 10th Amendment, look at this. This is not a power we delegated to the United States. Therefore, it doesn't belong to you. Therefore, that exercise of that power is a federal crime. You are denying me the liberty to live my life and the property I have in my body without due process of law. Anybody that tries to enforce that OSHA regulation is committing a federal crime. Title 18, United States Code, Section 242. That means government actors. That means state actors. That means private businesses are committing a federal crime by denying you your rights as protected by the Constitution of the United States under some fictitious regulation that is not authorized by the Constitution. I was talking with somebody yesterday, and I'm going to be talking to another group today, how what we need is we need to hire state representatives with spines, with intestinal fortitude, to recognize the not only the illegitimacy of these actions, the criminality of these actions, and the fact that they have the legal basis to look the federal government in the eye and say, no, we did not grant you this power. We did not delegate to you this power. Therefore, not only do you not have it, when you pretend to exercise it, not only are you committing a crime, we don't have to follow it because it's void. It's empty. It's meaningless. We need to learn to stand. Because Pastor Pawlowski is in his position, is in the position he is, in large part because in Canada, they didn't stand when their rights were being violated. And now you have governments that are out of control. Now that's Canada. But in America, we have people in jail for not bowing to illegal orders from the government. We have people who have lost their jobs, lost their livelihood, possibly lost their medical insurance because they wouldn't bow to an illegal order from a government actor. Even worse, we have businesses and people who are denying people their rights, who are actively out attacking, verbally, if not physically, attacking people who refuse to bow to an illegal order. Think of that. You have all of these businesses that are enforcing an illegal mandate on their employees. See, it's not just the government that's coming after your rights. It's not just possibly your employer that's coming after your rights. It's your neighbor. When they come to you and say, when they see you outside without a mask and they're in your face, they're trying to deny you your rights. When you go to a business and the business, because the government told them to, is pushing to deny you your rights, they're complicit. They're accessories. But you see, that's what happens because for decades, we have sat back, said, well, somebody else will do it. Somebody else will protect my rights. Somebody else will do this. Well, we can't do it ourselves. We need government to do it. We need lawyers. We need judges. We need to hire this party or that party. We never stop to think, hey, maybe we should just actually protect our own rights for ourselves. Now, I have to head off to break. Before I do, I want to remind you to check out Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. They have formulas designed to boost your immune health, help you sleep better, help you focus deeper, basically live a healthier life. If you are concerned about COVID, the best thing you can do is not take the vaccine, not wear the mask, but to have a healthy immune system. Now, I've used Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost, and I think you should try it too. It's designed to support your immune system with the vitamins and nutrition that your body needs so it can fight this for itself. It can fight COVID, it can fight the flu, it can fight colds, it can fight everything. That's what we want to do, support your body rather than rewriting the DNA. And now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off of your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud, try any of their products, try the Immune Super Boost, the REM Sleep, whatever. But don't forget to go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the promo code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. And today, well, I spent the first half talking about information, the need for information, the trust but verify. Information regarding COVID. Well, there's been another set of stories in the news lately. And this has to do with the reaction, shall we say, to parents that are upset with their school boards. Now, a lot has been coming out of Loudoun, Virginia, but there have been school boards across the country where parents are starting to stand up and say, excuse me, folks, you work for us. We get to determine what is best for our children, not you. And now a group called Parents Defending Education have uncovered some emails that point out that the CEO of the National School Board Association was in communication with the White House for weeks before the organization dropped its infamous letter. Oh, what infamous letter is that? That's the one that was asking the Biden administration to treat complaining parents to domestic terrorists. They claimed there were threats of violence, that it was crazy, and they wanted them to be treated as domestic terrorists. Now, I've already talked about the fact, nothing in there is terrorism. In fact, this is probably the school board association using their own form of intimidation. But now we find out that the NSBA was in contact with the White House, was in communication for weeks before they dropped this letter. We also find out, according to these emails, that the White House requested information on specific threats taking place. Well, that is kind of important, right? If you're claiming that there is a spike in threats, well, there should be threats, shouldn't there? So apparently, when they sent the letter addressed to President Biden, requesting the assistance of the federal government. Because why? Because any threats or attacks on the school board could not be handled by the state. Where's the state and local police in it? Yes. And we find out that what they referred to as examples of this spike really isn't a spike of violence. It's upset parents. Parents that are not happy with school boards that are ignoring them, that are promoting racist programs and racist educational tools, and that are shutting down the comments of parents when they're complaining about things like mask mandates, vaccine mandates, lockdowns, shutdowns. When a parent complains, they refer to this as a threat. Not always, but the more verbal ones. So this came to a lot of, backlash. There was a lot of backlash to the original letter, but what happened when they put the letter out? Well, Attorney General Garland, what's the first thing he did? He committed federal enforcement tools to be used in deciding, you know, in dealing with this problem. So again, we have at best, a local issue. If a parent made any threats or committed any violence against a school board member, that is a local issue. That is not a federal issue. It is not a terrorist attack. That is a local issue. But no, we'll get the feds involved because, well, the stadies weren't involved. And of course, Merrick Garland jumps right all over that. And then we find out after the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, they've been coordinating, this NSBA has been coordinating with the White House for weeks. And now the reports are that this National School Board is walking back their letter comparing parents to domestic terrorists. And I find it interesting because, again, first, we had several state school board organizations pull out of the NSBA because of this. We find out that, by the way, they've already been in touch with the White House. And now a letter went out to many NSBA members. Said, on behalf of the NSBA, we regret and apologize for the letter. To be clear, the safety of school board members and other public school officials and educators and students is our top priority, and there remains important work to be done on this issue. You know, went on to say, we apologize also for the strain and stress this situation has caused you and your organizations. So I'm wondering, if they sent this out, why are they now backpedaling? Why are they apologizing for this? I mean, let's face it, they should have known. You start calling people domestic terrorists, it's gonna get somebody's dander up. But according to the emails that Parents Defending Education have found, at least some of the emails, they seem to point out that the NSBA CEO, Chip Slavin, and its president, Viola Garcia, sent the letters without the approval of the organization's board. So I find that interesting. So now we find out that the NSBA has been undercut by two of its leading members, possibly without the advice and consent, without the information of the organization's board. Now, does that mean the board would not have approved this? Nobody knows. At least nobody except those people on the NSBA board. But here we have the government, in this case, the school boards, treating your children as if they are property of the state. That the school board gets to decide. And if you don't do what the school boards want, well, some school board association will call you domestic terrorists and try to seek the feds on you. Now, here's what I want to know. I'm kind of curious what the NSBA is going to do to its CEO and president if they did this without the approval of the organization's board. That's kind of curious. What I want to know is, what about Merrick Garland? You have the Attorney General of the United States, without any evidence of terrorism, throwing the weight of federal law enforcement, the Department of Justice, and the FBI on parents. Parents who are concerned with what their children are being taught, are concerned with things like the health of their students, the impact of mask mandates and eventually vaccine mandates. You have them being slandered. That's right. Slandered or defamed. I forget which one is which. Are any of these parents going to sue the NSBA for slander, for defamation, for referring to their objections to the actions of their representatives on the school board as acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials? Are they? Or is this all going to kind of blow over in a few days and, oh, it'll be replaced by the next, look, a chicken, you know, the next big scandal, the next big news drop? Is it? Because what the NSBA did is not simply a, oops, I made a mistake. Like I said, they defamed or slandered parents by referring to them as domestic terrorists. I mean, let's face it, if they're claiming that what they've done are acts of domestic terrorism, they're basically calling those people terrorists. And they did so on a national stage. They went to the President of the United States. They got him to sic the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, and the FBI on them. Yeah, when are they going to sue? I'd love to see him sue the NSBA. In fact, I'd love to see them, I'd love to see him sue Merrick Garland. If he's coming after them without any evidence, and there's, again, reports that Merrick Garland, they had no evidence. Apparently he was in a congressional hearing, and he admitted that the targeting of parents was not based on evidence, but only on the letter from the school board. So in a House hearing, he admitted that he was targeting parents without any probable cause. That he was investigating parents without any probable cause. Does that sound like a violation, maybe, of the Fourth Amendment to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects? If he was going to sick, if he was sicking the FBI on you to investigate you without any probable cause, is it possible that the NSBA filed a false complaint? I don't know if a letter to the president qualifies as a legal complaint, but did they file false charges? And what does it say about the government of the United States, the government in Washington, D.C., that a letter without any proof, without any evidence, with nothing but an accusation of incidents they can't even document, is enough to get them to sic law enforcement on apparently innocent citizens? Tell me that's not a criminal enterprise. Tell me this isn't the NSBA doing the effectively going to the Corleone house and asking the Godfather to make them an offer they can't refuse. To use the levers of government to bully and intimidate those you disagree with. That's what we've fallen to. How can we still look ourselves in the mirror and call ourselves a republic under those situations? Now, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't happen, but where are the consequences? Where's the investigation into Merrick Garland for investigating without evidence, for depriving those citizens of the right to not be investigated without probable cause? Where is it? That's what I want to know. I want to see when people do stuff like this, it's not enough to say, oh, how bad that is. They've committed crimes. I want to see them investigated, prosecuted, and if found guilty, punished. But if you're telling me all I have to do is write a letter on some letterhead from what sounds like a national association to get the federal government to investigate those who disagree with me, that's not the rule of law. That's not justice. No, that's intimidation. That's manipulation. And the fact that Merrick Garland fell for it proves either he is criminally liable or he's inept and incapable. In either case, remember, this is still the chief law enforcement, well, the head law enforcement officer of the federal government. He is chief behind the president. The president's primary job is to execute the laws of the United States. He works for the president. This is what we've fallen to. This is where we are. But guess what happened? You see, now we find that these actions, these empty accusations, these threats, this use of intimidation, well, in some cases, I guess it's worked. Because now we are finding that the Washington Education Association, the largest union in Washington State, now told its members that parents are critical of a critical theory-based indoctrination, education, that parents are critical of that type of education should be treated as enemies. See, the WEA published a guidebook for its members, and in that guidebook said that teachers know what is best for students, and that concerned parents should be viewed as ideological opponents to be resisted and not taken seriously. Then this report came out. Judicial Watch, again, obtained emails that found that, remember Loudoun County? I mentioned them at the beginning. Loudoun County, Virginia, they had seemed to be the center of a lot of this craziness going on with school boards. So according to these emails, there's apparently various school board members, teachers, even some parents that are inclined toward implementing a racist curriculum for teachers and students. The superintendent of the Loudoun County Public Schools was found out supporting a Virginia bill, which later became a law, that would help the district promote their race agenda in direct contradiction to the expressed will of the parents at school board meetings. Now, part of the problem may be the confluence of critical race theory with critical theories and the actual title of the resources used. In other words, it would be incorrect to say that a critical race theory program is being instituted at Loudoun County schools. But the ideas, the agenda behind critical race theory and critical theory as a whole is being taught. And the school board and the superintendent apparently are looking for ways to get around the parents' desire not to have their children turned into racists at the school. I mean, for months, the officials at the Loudoun schools have downplayed the district's role in promoting this. But now we're seeing emails that say, yes, they are promoting. They have, while they haven't adopted the term critical race theory, they certainly are promoting, well, the tenets of critical race theory. I mean, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Tell me again why you send your loved children to such a toxic wasteland called public schools. Now, not all public schools are as toxic as others, but I'm sorry, how can you trust a school with teachers that are being trained by this union? I certainly couldn't. It's one of the reasons why we homeschooled our daughter. My wife and I agreed. We would homeschool. We would do whatever it took to teach our own daughter because of the toxic wasteland that is public schools. Now, at the time, yes, we were concerned about some of the things that were being taught. I've told the story before. Might as well tell it again. I had many years ago, probably a couple decades ago now, I was talking to a mother in our church who was very upset. Her young daughter had been given age-inappropriate, sexually explicit material in school. And the mother was not given the chance to opt out. She went and met with the principal and asked the principal why she was not given the chance to opt out. The principal said, well, We find when we give parents the opportunity to opt out, they tend to do so. Yeah, this is nothing new. This idea that parents are an obstacle, not a partner in teaching, that actually the parents are in charge of the education and it's the schools that are supposed to partner with them. That's gone. So I ask you again, why do you trust your children to the indoctrination of people who don't think you have anything to say in the education of your children? I know, we pay through it through taxes. What's your child's education worth? You know, when we declared independence, our founding fathers pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. What are you willing to give up to educate your children? Now, maybe you can't. There are some, maybe you can't, and I understand that. If that's the case, what are you doing to protect them from the toxic sludge that is so many of our public schools? From this idea that government is in charge of everything, that parents have nothing, have no serious content to contribute to their child's education. What are you doing to correct that at home? See, even if you can't take your children out of public school, even if you can't homeschool them or send them to a better school, what are you doing to deprogram them from the Marxist toxicity that is public school? And if the answer is you didn't even think about it, when are you going to start? How many parents do you know that they look at their child and say, what happened to you? This sweet child is now this warped Marxist. It's because they've been indoctrinated in school and you've done nothing to protect them against it. And I'm sorry, but we have to do better. We have to teach the rising generation to be free. Because right now, the rising generation are being taught to be subjects of a kingdom. They're told that they are subjects of the government in Washington, D.C., that they have no voice. They are to sit down and shut up and do what they're told. And if the government teaches them that they're racist simply because of the color of their skin, well, that's the way it is. If the government's telling them that they can't tell the difference between boys and girls, well, that's the way it is. And remember, all of these teachers that are promoting this, all of these administrators that are promoting this, all these politicians that are promoting this, all these professors that are promoting this, learned it from somewhere. And it started in the schools. It started in the public schools that prepared them to be good little Marxists, good little socialists, good little cogs in the machine. And we let it happen because either we don't think we can do anything about it, or we're just not willing to do anything about it. But what really disturbs me, now there's a lot that really disturbs me, is how much influence these public unions have over public policy. Now listen, you want to get together with some other workers and negotiate together for working conditions? Okay, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But there are emails that were obtained by Americans for Public Trust through a FOIA request. And they show something kind of interesting. So you remember all the questions about school reopening guidelines? You know, the CDC is recommending this and recommending that. And of course, schools are saying, well, we have to do this because the CDC said so. Or the school, the, you know, they're saying we can't do that because the CDC said so. Then we find out that the CDC was making last-minute changes to their guidance because two teachers' unions asked them to. Yeah, the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, the two largest teachers' unions in the country, were setting policy for what is supposedly a medical condition. See, we were told that we had to close the schools because medically it's dangerous to have them open. but now we're finding out it wasn't medical. It was union-based. Now, did the unions have a medical reason? Well, if it wasn't, why wasn't the CDC looking at the medicine behind it? Because this whole thing, if it ever was about the medicine and the science, that died somewhere around March or April of 2020. This is not a medical pandemic. It is a societal pandemic. It is a virus of the mind that we believe that government rules our lives. That all power is inherent in government and we must do whatever they say. But that's contrary to our Constitution. The constitutions of most of our states said that all power is inherent in the people. That we establish governments. That we consent to their powers. But we've been indoctrinated with this idea that no, government can do whatever it wants. Whatever Congress says goes. That there's nobody above the Supreme Court. And now we find that all those decisions about your child and going to school in person and the wearing of masks were decisions made not because of the medical science, but because of the politics of the teachers' unions. And this is what happens when parents are disconnected from the education of their children. You know, originally we started public schools in this country because we thought basic understandings of reading and writing and arithmetic and basic civics were necessary to create a functional citizen. And we thought it was so important that first communities would gather together, they'd pull their resources, and they'd hire a teacher, and they'd build a schoolhouse. Then we said, you know what, let's make sure that a community that simply can't afford it isn't denied it. So we decided to collect taxes and have public schools. But at some point, we walked away from overseeing those schools. I suppose we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, we walked away from overseeing our governments. Why should we be surprised that we walked away from overseeing our schools? As I said, I remember when I was in school, my mother volunteered. She would help the teachers. There was a teacher that had an extremely large class. My mother volunteered to help. She was involved. When something happened at school, my parents were involved. If something was going wrong, they were involved. They were engaged. But nowadays, it seems like public schools treated more like daycare. Parents can't wait for summer vacation to be over so that someone else will take care of their kids for them. They hand them over at 5 years old and say, here, educate my children. And they went away blissfully ignorant of what was being taught. So if there's one silver lining of this COVID fiasco, this disaster, this devastation that has been wrought on us by governments using COVID as an excuse, is that more and more parents got to see what their children are actually being taught, and they got fed up. Homeschooling is at an all-time high. Parents are more engaged. Now, is it enough? I don't think so. But it's a start. I'll take it. And I'll do whatever I can to help. That's why I do the Constitution study. It's a tool. It's a resource for people not only to educate themselves, but to educate their children. Why do you think I go to homeschool conferences? Why do you think I speak to school groups? Because this information is important. And whether your child's going to a public school, a private school, or it's homeschooled, I've yet to find a curriculum that does a decent job of educating what the Constitution actually says, which is why I wrote my book, The Constitution Study, to help you read and study and teach the Constitution. You want to find out more? Well, head to constitutionstudy.com. But these are tools because regardless of what you can do, we need to help educate our children to be free. That's what John Jay said. We need to read and study, every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they'll sooner perceive when they're violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. We need to stop winding government up and letting it go. Public schools are not public schools anymore. They are government schools. The public has very little say in what's going on. It's the government that controls. The state government, the federal government through money, the school board, the government official on the school board through their direct influence. We need to be involved again. We need to treat them as our, in the school board, as our servants again. And even if you don't have a child in that school, maybe you have the time, maybe you have the opportunity that you can still contribute. Because if you pay taxes in that school district, you have every right to be involved, to go to those school board meetings, to run for school board, to offer your wisdom as part of the package. But let's stop treating schools as these autonomous vehicles and just, you know, throw our kids in the front and pray that they come out as well-rounded, educated, civic-minded citizens. Because it's not happening. And as Einstein said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is a definition of insanity. The only good news is we can wake up from this insanity. But it's going to take a little bit of work. It's going to take some time. It's going to take some effort. Now, before I go, I want to remind you that all of my shows go to podcasts a day or two after the broadcast is on the radio. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you do me a favor, go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and rate this show so that others can find out about the Constitution Study.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.